Carl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too.
Yes.
Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week. Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
Hey, TCO fam.
Hey, everybody.
You guys, we had a crazy weekend.
Yes. Our very first two live shows back to back.
Yeah, I gotta tell you guys, they were absolutely magical.
They were magical.
Hilarious, fun.
Yeah.
We had a blast.
Everyone had a blast.
I don't think I've drank that much since I was in high school.
Let me tell you, you guys have probably heard me say this a zillion times. I've never been handed so many glasses of alcohol, not even at my wedding to super hot husband Mike. Seriously, the amount of... I never only had one glass.
I had
two and then a third that I was like keeping my eye on.
I know. You guys, I did a death drop.
I know. That was Sunday night's show. Yeah. We were all warmed up from Saturday.
What else happened?
Well, we met so many of you, first of all.
It was the best.
You guys traveled from so far. And
I
we're so
know.
Grateful. It was really bananas.
It's a blur. We laughed so hard.
Yeah.
And the good news is, you guys, the entire live show is now up on the Patreon feed. It's a video. It's like one of our first videos. You can watch the entire thing.
Yeah, it's from Saturday's show. So
yeah,
it was like
our very first show.
Fresh.
Also, to tell you, we are taking the week off.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to rerun this amazing, awesome episode about Aileen Wuornos.
Uh-huh.
We're obsessed with it. We're obsessed with you guys.
Yeah, we did just record something for the Patreon, though. We did record the Jinx.
Yes.
So the Patreon is still going strong.
Yep, and we love you.
We love you so much.
Don't forget, if you want everything on our Patreon feed, patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed.
Yep.
Or just go to the Patreon link on our website. And if you missed our first two live shows, guys, there's more. We already have tickets up for our Pride show in June.
In June in New York City.
We're adding more dates between now and then.
Yep.
And we hope to see you.
Yeah. I hope you guys enjoy revisiting this.
I know, me too. I certainly did.
Yeah, I'm going to listen again. Why not? You guys, I wait for TCO to drop. I'm just like you.
Julian Pensavale.
Patrick Hines. Ooh. Every week you surprise me. What's it going to be next week?
It'll be like a full-on Lin-Manuel Miranda rap.
Oh, great.
Girl, what are we talking about this week?
We're talking about Aileen, the life and death of a serial killer.
And also, like, the many Dilfy incarnations of Nick Broomfield.
Do you agree that his voiceovers are always like, he's too busy for this shit, but he made the documentary? His voiceovers are always like, so now I'm back with Aileen. I'm like, Nick, you didn't have to do this. I'm like, oh, there's that familiar bored voiceover again. This is definitely a Nick Broomfield production.
I never provoked those guys. It's very nice, very ladylike. I didn't even swear in front of my clients. I had no intentions of killing anyone. I'm not the type of person.
I want to tell you something about her birth. I thought that she got some kind of brain damage.
I defended myself, which everybody has a right to do.
If I could do it all over again, I would have became an outstanding citizen of America.
I sentence you to death for the murder of David Spears.
I'll be up in heaven while y'all are rotting in hell. Your wife and kids get raped.
My evil happened to come out because of circumstances.
She's been failed by the legal system.
Cops knew who I was and they covered it up.
turn me into a serial killer.
They want to turn him into high-profile cases for books and movies.
We're executing a person who's mad.
I believe in the death penalty, and I have a duty to implement the law.
Eileen, life and death of a serial killer.
Thanks a lot, society, for railroading my ass.
So we start driving down this, like, so Nick Broomfield dirt road where it's like, are you driving and holding the camera? Probably. And we're, like, in Florida off I-75, says Nick, like, totally over it already.
It was here in these woods off Florida's I-75 that in the space of 1 year, the police found the bodies of seven men. They were killed with this gun, a high standard 9.22.
They were all killed with a high standard 9.22, and in my notes I wrote, whatever the hell that means.
What happened is that Nick Broomfield had made a documentary about Eileen Wuornos years ago called The Selling of a Serial Killer. Mm-hmm. So he knows Eileen Wuornos, he has a history with her, and he, we'll find out in a minute, like, has been summoned back to the United States to be... Just the look on your face.
Did you guys hear that? That was the eye roll. Did you hear it?
I don't know
if it translates.
He kind
to
of wants
medium.
It to be an adventure movie. It's a little bit weird. It's like getting the band back together is kind of like his idea of what this movie is.
Right. Like, let's get the band back together about this person who killed people and is on death row. Like,
I know.
Oh,
it's
Nick.
Terrible. So basically what's happening is that Nick Broomfield is giving us like the recounting of like what we already know about Eileen Wuornos.
Eight men have been shot to death in cold blood on Central Florida highways, including the busy tourist route of I-75. But this time, there's an even more chilling twist to the slayings. Police say for the first time in criminal history, these killers may be murdering with a feminine touch.
On January the 9th, 1991, Eileen Carol Wuornos was arrested in Daytona Beach, Florida. She worked as a hitchhiking hooker.
And we see some of the families that have been, like, affected.
The victims' families.
I wish people could just see your face.
I don't know why I'm super eye-rolly today. Sorry, everybody.
I just have to quickly mention Shirley Humphreys, who says,
I hope she makes up with, quote, Old Sparky.
And then she pauses and she's like,
you know who Old Sparky is.
You know who Old Sparky is. You know.
I'm not laughing at the dead. Like, it's horrible that all these men are dead. It's horrible that Eileen had a horrible life. But you guys, some of this is going to be funny.
Yeah. And it's also a little, can I just go back to Nick for just a minute?
Oh, please, always.
How many times does he call her a hitchhiking hooker?
I know.
No less than 24.
We get it, Nick. We know what she did for a living.
A hitchhiking hooker.
P.S. For anybody who doesn't know, Nick Broomfield directed The Curtain Courtney, which is like our episode 3 or 4 or something. So we have a history with Nick Broomfield.
And it's the same, like, it just feels the same, like, not the best video quality. Yeah. Everything's super handheld. There's a lot of conversations that take place where people, like, aren't totally aware that they're being recorded. It's all just, this is super Nick Broomfield.
Yeah, it's very Broomfield.
So we start off and running with this video of her original confession.
Yes. We can't play any of it because the audio is awful, but like, yeah. She basically came, she got arrested, and then she basically confesses to everything.
Yeah, and she says that it was all in self-defense, and she said she wishes she never had the gun, she wishes she was never a hooker, her words.
Right.
She wishes she never did any of it, and she is saying that these men, all seven men, right now, Aileen's story is, during this confession, that all seven men were very abusive to her. They were her Johns, I guess.
Yeah.
And they were all very abusive to her, or tried to be very abusive to her, which happens in sex worker industry
all the time.
The time.
Especially, like, South Florida side of the road.
Hitchhiking.
Like sex in a car in the woods. Like,
I mean,
that's what was happening.
It's like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
The idea of it is absolutely terrible.
Right, yeah.
So she is basically saying every working girl's worst fears were happening to her, so she had to kill these men.
And she had a gun in her bag, and she killed these men. You come to understand right away that there's definitely mental health issues here.
Yeah. And then we just are immediately hearing the other sides of it.
Terry Humphrey's father was a retired police chief.
There wasn't any sex involved in my dad's murder. They cut him... They did an autopsy on my dad. They wouldn't release his body for over a week. They cut him from stem to stern. There wasn't any semen there, anywhere.
And you don't know what's real, you don't know what's true, you know. But the one thing that he says is that his first film ended with the resignation of the Florida police officers. There was like this whole conspiracy.
My old film had ended with this announcement of the resignation of Florida police officers who had illicitly entered into Hollywood movie deals to sell the story of America's first female serial killer, the Eileen Wuornos story. There was speculation at the time that if police officers did in fact receive money, All Eileen Wuornos's death sentences could be overturned.
Nick is talking about how over the years since that movie came out, he's kept in touch with her. And then one day, he opens his door and he's been given a subpoena.
And then a few weeks ago, I opened my front door and to my amazement was served with a subpoena to attend Eileen's final appeal before execution. I had no idea how things would turn out and that I'd be witnessing an execution in 1.5 years' time.
Again, this is the point of the movie where, like, all of the people who are in this trial are, like, descending on this hotel.
Oh,
and it literally is Nick Broomfield's, like, getting the band back together movie. Where, like, it's like he's seeing all of his friends again.
Well, one person would not call Nick a friend. That person's name is Dr. Legal, also known as Steve, or as Nick so brilliantly describes him, Steve the lawyer.
Just to be clear, Dr. Legal was the person who represented her in her first original trial. And we'll find out later, he was hired by her, like, fake adopted, like, born-again Christian adoptive mother.
I can't wait to get into that.
Me too. But, like, he's a hack, she's a hack, and he was awful.
Right.
First, we meet Aileen's new lawyer, mm-hmm. Joe Hobson, who's, like, a real attorney. Basically, we're getting the rundown about how, like, Aileen did not get a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of this appeal is to try to get a new trial.
Right. Because you're telling me Steve the lawyer, a.k.a. Dr. Legal, didn't do right by his client. Do you want to know? So there's this commercial, right, that they play.
Oh my God.
Which is basically like Better Call Saul.
It really is.
Only real and not Bob Odenkirk, so it's not awesome.
Yeah.
Most of us would probably never worry about spending time in jail, but if you are ever involved in the criminal justice system, you will need a lawyer who...
Would you like to know what the fine print is? Because I paused it and
yes,
wrote that shit
please.
Down. The hiring of a lawyer is an important decision that should not be based solely on advertisements. Before you decide, ask me to send you free written information about my qualifications and experience.
I love that you paused to read the fine print.
Are you kidding? Of course. I was like, this is going to be great. It reminded me of reading the want
yes,
ads in tabloid. I was
yes,
like, come on, this could be a gem. This could be great. No one reads the fine print. That's why we do this, you guys. That's why we're here doing this podcast.
So now we're in court. And first of all, Nick had featured Dr. Legal heavily in his first movie.
Right.
And we find out that this guy, Steve, the lawyer, Dr. Lawyer, whatever,
yeah,
had been, like, run out of town because, like, it was so bad.
Yeah, and it was very obvious. He didn't try. He just pled guilty. He didn't investigate. He, like, wanted her to be put to death because that's a more sensational story.
Steve, the lawyer, had made no attempt to investigate the cops. He pled guilty to all the murders and didn't even try and make a deal for lesser sentence. Eileen had no money to pay him, so Steve used the money obtained from interview fees.
But so Nick sees him in the courtroom.
Oh, this is so good. You guys, and this is only like less than 10 minutes into the movie.
I know, already.
So you're just like,
we're off
oh,
and running.
Man.
I know.
Here we go. This is going to be a good one. I have like 9 pages of notes for this movie.
So Steve does not see Nick. Nick goes over to Steve, like mm-hmm. taps him on the shoulder.
This is the first time I've seen Steve for 11 years.
And what does Steve say to him?
Fuck you.
And fuck the queen.
Fuck the queen.
Fuck you.
What?
Fuck you. Hey.
Fuck you and the queen.
And the queen.
What are you
reading?
Fuck you and your documentary.
Don't
talk to me.
What?
Don't talk to me.
So can I just paint the picture if you guys have, because I know some of you
oh
don't watch
God.
The documentaries, which is totally fine and you don't have to.
Yeah, you absolutely don't have to.
Let's just paint a picture of Steve the lawyer. So he is wearing a Pink Floyd tie. It's the Dark Side of the Moon Pink Floyd tie. He's a lawyer. He has this Bob Ross looking haircut that
oh
at
God.
First I was like, is that like a fake disco wig? Is that a fake wig? There's no way that's real. It's just this big, like Bob Ross is the only way to describe
I know.
It.
It's true. I texted that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's just like a schlub. He's
just
like, where's the,
schlub.
Like Nick, where's the derpy music?
I know. And like, he pretends to be mad at Nick for 2 seconds and then he's like, oh, then they're best friends again.
Cause he's like, oh, is there a camera here?
Right.
Are we awesome? Sweet. Good to be in another movie.
Right. So then Steve has to take the stand.
Steve, the lawyer, takes
the
stand.
So Steve is on the stand.
This is so ridiculous. So basically, the big question is, did Steve the lawyer try to charge Nick Broomfield $25,000 for an interview with Aileen?
Right.
Steve is like, nope, not at all.
Will you admit that you are depicted on the movie The Selling of a Serial Killer doing exactly that, trying to get $10,000 or I think $25,000 for an interview?
I don't think there's any evidence that I tried to get $25,000 or anything.
Jump cut to Nick's first movie where there's literally money being exchanged.
Nick, wait a second. What's Davy Crockett doing on a $100 bill? Thank you very much.
Okay, now this is also where we meet this awful, awful, awful woman. Her name is Arlene Prowley, who was like, she's very heavily featured in the first movie. Like, she's like Aileen's conservative Christian, quote, adoptive mother. She saw Aileen's story in the newspaper and like adopted her through the mail. Like, it's just ridiculous. And the whole idea is that she like has a farm where she raises she-wolves and like, and Aileen was going to get out of jail and go live with her and like raise, it's just, it's a nightmare. But this woman is totally taking advantage of Aileen.
Right.
Arlene Prowley, the born again Christian, hired Steve and persuaded Aileen to come clean with God and plead guilty. Steve had been advised that Aileen was paranoid and suffered from borderline personality disorder, but still went along with his cockeyed scheme.
I forgot the garbage bell.
Oh my God.
I can't believe I forgot the garbage bell.
Oh my God.
It was sitting right here.
You know what I just feel like?
What?
I feel like Winifred in Hocus Pocus, where she's like, book, just summoning the garbage bell. It's just floating.
That's my favorite movie. Okay, girl, are you ready? Arlene Prowley.
Can I just like make this explode? Yeah. She's such a fucking nightmare. But not for the she-wolves.
Right.
Not that's like, it's kind of a cool, I'm like, oh, what? Oh, no, and then I'm like, focus,
but
focus,
like,
not the point.
She-wolves are a real thing. That just sounds like right out of like Pocahontas.
They're just hybrid dog. I mean, I guess you can't, first of all, you can't breed she-wolves without a male dog, everybody. Okay. I don't care how Christian you are. You can't just pray a wolf into existence. Because if you can, I would have done it already. So let's just get that out of the way right now. But there are these things like wolf dogs. And in Florida, there are like no laws about anything. So like they're legal. You can like breed them so that you like breed wolves and dogs together. It's a terrible idea because then you have a wolf dog in your house who doesn't know how to be domesticated and is like ripping up your couch for fun and trying to eat your small children.
Can we just go back to there are no rules in Florida about anything?
They're real. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. What's the rule in Florida?
Oh my God. So the whole thing is that, so we see Nick in the first movie, like negotiating, saying like, we don't have $25,000. And they're like joking about like, well, haha, should there be a counteroffer? Haha. And then like Steve, the lawyer, is like, yes, there should be a counteroffer.
So the next stage is really to come up with a counteroffer.
No, the next stage is to come up with $25,000.
Right.
Okay, well then if you don't, then the next thing to do is to really get a counteroffer.
And the only offer is that you just give me the $25,000. Like, Steve, right, the lawyer says, I want you to pay me $25,000 like 10
times.
But
then the fake adopted mom chimes in, and she explains how this all works.
So we would basically then pay the money to, well, we'd pay money to you, or to, as her legal,
as her mom, and then Steve gets a percentage as our agent.
For being our agent.
I was like, No. That's so not how this works.
I know. But then Nick has this whole thing about how like he always liked Steve.
I have to say I always liked Steve. He was an old hippie from Micanopy who was just way out of his depth.
He's defending him.
Steve is one of the cast of characters. He's staying at the hotel. Like, we're going to see a lot of Steve in this movie.
Mm, great.
So one of the next people that we meet staying at the hotel is this, like, horrible woman, Dawn, who's Aileen's best friend.
Does she have eyebrows? Are they super thin, or did she just paint them on or, like, pencil them in?
Dawn, here's my conflicting feelings about Dawn. This was in the Facebook group. People were like, please ring the bell for Dawn, thinking that gay people were invented 15 years ago.
Right.
I don't even know how this comes up in conversation. Obviously, Aileen was dating a woman, uh-huh, and Aileen is Dawn's best friend, so I'm assuming it came up that way. But they're in... Okay, this scene
and Dawn's
is...
gay. That's how it came up. Because Nick's like, so, like, were you jealous because you're also in love with Aileen? Like,
oh
what?
Oh, my God. They're in the hotel room, and Dawn goes on this, makes this diatribe about how, like, gays didn't exist until, like, 10, 15 years ago.
And then she's like, maybe, like, more than 15.
They weren't invented or whatever. There was no gay people.
Well, what were they all doing?
They weren't gay. There was no such thing as gay.
They were in the closet.
No, they weren't. There was no such thing. I don't remember a person at school gay.
She keeps associating gay people with being in school. Like, she's like, there were no gay people when I was in school. Did you go to school with gay people? Like, what does school have
and
to do with it?
It is the way that she's saying the word. The word is, it's like she's spitting the word out. It's very Mr. Becky.
Mm.
gay people, gay stuff.
And so finally Nick says,
I'm sure that there probably were. I went to a British public school. There were many. That's where it was invented.
Oh, well, of course. There must have been gays. I went to an English public school. That's where they were invented. Did you hear off camera, Don's like, oh, really?
Yeah, of course.
She legit believes, like, she thinks he's being serious. Don, you idiot. Can we get a ding for her?
I hate her.
I know, I hate her too. But then Don comes back around later. Don was a very good friend to Aileen, and actually I think is a very good friend to Aileen throughout. Like, she's really there for her. So
maybe we'll argue about that later, because I'm not sure how good of a friend she's been.
All right, we'll get there. Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too. Yes. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to, like, go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week. Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right. So in the middle of all this, everyone taking the stand, Q Chicago, there's this footage of Aileen who just keeps being sentenced to death and more charges over and over again.
Right.
And she is super aggressive and just outright terrifying.
Okay, there will be an automatic appeal. You have the right to an appeal. Mr. Glazer, is that going to be handled by you or the public defender?
Your wife and kids get raped.
I would ask that you would point the public defender's office.
I know I was raped. You weren't nothing but a bunch of scum.
Therefore, these proceedings are now
putting somebody who was raped to death on the fucker.
It's scary.
It's very jarring. And there's more of that, you guys.
Oh, we are just getting started. Buckle up.
So then Nick Broomfield takes a stand. My favorite thing that he says is,
I like to flatter myself that I was being asked for my legal opinion.
Nick. Girl.
But it turned out I was there to talk about Steve's marijuana smoking.
We're back to Steve, guys. Back to Steve.
So here's the deal with that. We learn about this, like, seven-joint ride. And
this, again, is from the first movie, when Steve was representing her.
The big question was whether Steve had consumed seven very strong joints before giving Aileen legal advice in prison.
So there's this footage of Steve driving the car, and Nick is, of course, handheld camera, zoom, like, jumpy in the car. He loves driving and filming things.
Right.
It was 6 a.m. Steve said it was a seven-joint ride to the prison, and he brought along a tape of his own music with him singing and playing all the instruments, especially for the occasion.
And listening to Steve's own cover versions of Pink Floyd, where Steve played all the instruments and sang everything. Because why listen to... I don't know what's worse, Pink Floyd or a cover of Pink Floyd. I hate Pink Floyd, so I don't know. Either way, it's a nightmare to me. And Aileen's face when they're playing the music, she's hysterical laughing. I'm like, girl, same. And the stupid lawyer is drumming his fingers on the stand. It's like, you guys like this Pink Floyd cover band of one? It's one dude. Worst.
I know. It's awful.
And Steve is just like smoking joints because he says the ride to the prison to visit Aileen is a seven-joint ride.
Right. So what is trying to be proven here is that this seven-joint ride didn't actually happen.
Right.
Because they're trying... The people against Aileen are saying, like, you don't get a new trial or this appeal doesn't work because you were fairly represented. Steve did do a good job representing you, or to the best of his ability. Mm. What he then tries to get Nick to do is explain the job of editing a documentary.
Do you mean copying and pasting?
Right.
Isn't it true that in doing your work, you routinely edit
things, correct?
Well, you always add it afterwards, yeah.
Because editing involves cutting and pasting and putting things together.
And Nick's like, I do copy. I'm not so sure about the pasting.
I don't know about the pasting, but you certainly cut.
And Nick thought that was such a zinger. And it is such a lawyer. It's like, does anyone do any research? Like, you just sound like such an out of touch derp to be like, so what, y'all are copying and pasting? Like, are you kidding me?
So his whole point, and you guys, they wheel out the VCR and they pop in the tape and they show that Steve, when he's smoking the joint, is wearing one shirt. And then when he's getting out of the car at the jail, he's wearing a different shirt.
Mm-hmm. But he had a blue shirt on.
And now he's got a white one.
Now he's got a white shirt.
And Nick makes the very good point of like, yeah, he was putting on a nice white shirt to go into the courthouse.
Wait, it's possible he changed his shirt. I've got, maybe he put a clean white shirt on for the prison visit.
Mm-hmm. Like he's an idiot lawyer. He was wearing a crappy shirt that smelled like pot.
Right.
He changed his shirt to go into the, and then it's hilarious because like that kind of trips up the lawyer. And then Broomfield starts to just like go with it. He's like, wouldn't you?
If I was making that trip, I would probably change my shirt at the end of the trip. I don't know about you.
But that's not the point of my question, is it?
I don't know, but I would probably bring a clean shirt along for my visit. Mm-hmm. You, I would.
Just it goes completely off the rails.
Yeah.
Also, the funniest thing that happens is when Nick is walking out of the court, he goes to say goodbye to Aileen and he tries to shake her hand. And literally the female bailiff that's like sitting with Aileen, who I swear had been asleep or playing a video game on her phone, all of a sudden is like, no, no.
No. This could not get any worse. But yeah, let's just make a handshake awkward. Sure. Sure.
All right. So Nick gets a call that while he's in town with his cameras, Aileen wants to, like, see him.
I got a message that Aileen wanted me to come meet her at the local jail. She had something to say.
And what happens? Well, first of all, he has to fish a microphone out of her shirt.
You guys, the awkward moments just keep on coming. It's just...
Get it out of there, Nick. It's right.
I'm just trying to... Sorry.
Putting a microphone on her. Phew.
It was the microphone, which is, you know, sorry about that.
Oh, lady.
All right.
And there's a moment where she like really wants to get what she wants to say out right,
yeah,
and accurately.
Yeah.
And she does this, and ladies with long hair, or people with long hair, we've all done this, the
yes.
little flip.
Yes.
You throw your head upside down and then just see for a little bit extra body.
Yeah.
That's what she does because she really wants it to be perfect. And she makes this statement about how she's concerned for the families of the victims, no remorse.
Yeah,
she basically absolutely. She says these sentences so fast she just wants to get them out to like say that she said it.
I get my hair out of my face while I'm doing this because I'm really concerned about the family members, man. So I want to say this again, over.
So then this is where we hear basically that stupid garbage Arlene whatever. The born again
like,
Christian.
Adopted, fake adopted mother.
Like, who adopts someone through the newspaper? How do you even
somebody
do that?
Somebody who's got 25,000 smackers in her eyes.
Again, no laws in Florida. You could just do that. You could just, like, write to Dear Abby and be like, Dear Abby, I wish to adopt that person I saw in the newspaper, whatever. So this is when you hear, like, her influence coming in because Aileen is saying that she doesn't want to die a liar.
Okay. I cannot go in the execution chamber and die in the execution chamber as a liar. And I cannot go in the execution chamber and be executed under the devil. I have to come clean and cleanse my spirit in the name of Jesus Christ. I killed those seven men in first degree murder and robbery. As they said, they had it right. A serial killer.
Yeah, well, the big bombshell here, in a sense, is that she says that none of them were for self-defense.
Right.
None of them. And Nick is like, really?
And it's not that you just decided that you wanted to die and you wanted to get it over and done with, that you changed your story. But I heard, you know, that you just couldn't stand being on death row after 12 years.
Because it used to be all self-defense. So what are you talking about?
No. The reason is it's serious. There's no way, and nobody should go in that execution chamber dying on a hope for a lie.
But there's also like no remorse here from her.
Nick, and that this is the last time I'm gonna say it. You have to kill Aileen Morris because she'll kill again.
Ah! Oh my God!
Why does she talk like that?
It's so
I know.
I know. Like, she doesn't sound like someone who wants to, like, this sounds like a script to me.
Because it is a script.
Right.
And we'll get to this later. Maybe we disagree on this. But, like, what she's decided to do is end all appeals and let the death penalty happen. She just wants that to happen now.
Right.
So she's coming, she's bringing this story to Nick as if bringing it to the media to say, get the word out there. I'm taking it all back. None of this was self-defense. It was cold-blooded murder. Mm-hmm. And the death penalty should stand. Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too. Yeah. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to, like, go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is, you for know? Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week. Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
So now we're back in court. Now that Aileen has turned this corner, there were all of these witnesses that were lined up to be sort of character witnesses about how awful her childhood was. And Aileen makes this, like, this statement to the judge.
And I've already told my attorneys on numerous occasions, these people did not grow up with me at all. They lived in the neighborhood, but they didn't really associate with me, my brother, my sister, and everybody else.
Aileen does not want anything that could possibly prevent the death penalty from happening to happen in court this day.
And even the judge is like, no, they can't be witnesses if the lawyers know they're lying.
Right.
That's not, we have one rule in Florida and that's it. Or whatever.
The attorney can call them, but he can't put on anyone he thinks is committing perjury. That's unethical for him to do that. If he thinks they're lying, if he knows that they're lying, he can't put them on.
Is that garbage bill warmed up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Are you ready for these witnesses?
Yup.
Danny Caldwell? Yeah. Here's his story. Like many other boys in the neighborhood, he lost his virginity to Aileen. Mm.
Let me just say also, these stories start when she's very, very young.
Like nine or ten.
There's a story that she was trading oral sex for cigarettes when she was nine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's on the stand. That's on the record. That's horrible.
Horrifying.
So all of this was happening. She's not losing her virginity when she's 17 years old.
Right.
And these boys are not. These are kids in the backwoods of Florida or Michigan or wherever it is.
It was Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, Michigan at the time. And it's sickening and disgusting.
Yeah.
And they're all like playing a part. I can't believe they didn't ask for like a blurry face.
Are you ready for another one?
Yeah.
Jerry Moss.
Oh, this guy.
This guy.
This guy.
This guy.
Just take this away from me. I can't.
And I will say, it is a testament to these people now that they're willing to come on the stand to admit to these horrible things that they did to help her in any way that they can, because they feel badly
for
where she is. But this guy, this garbage asshole,
has
all these stories about how, like, Aileen wanted to be boyfriend, girlfriend. He didn't, like, in public, he pretended like he didn't know her.
When you were in public around other kids, when the rest of the kids were around, how did you treat her?
Like she was nobody, like she was dirt, like I had nothing to do with her, you know.
What would you say to her?
Tell her, get the fuck out of my face and go some fucking place else.
He tells this story about her following him down the street. He would turn and throw rocks at her.
If she were following along behind you, what would you do?
Depending on who was with me or whatever, but I'd turn around and throw rocks at her and tell her to get the fuck out of there. Go home.
Why would you do that?
Because I didn't want to be seen with her. I didn't want to be associated with her.
Like, it's so horrible.
Yeah.
And to hear the person who did it explain it, yeah. it's not like someone was like, and then this guy did this. Like, to hear it come out of his own mouth is just like,
right.
I hate you.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many horrible stories in yeah. this documentary about the abuse that she suffered as a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
That. There's a lot of little nuggets that are dropped throughout this documentary about the actual abuse in her own family that she suffered.
Yeah.
For example, she was raised by a man who was her grandfather, who was maybe her actual biological father.
Mm-hmm.
Who also molested her and her mother. Like, there's...
And beat them.
And beat them. It is absolutely excruciating to watch.
Yeah, it really is. Absolutely.
So, at this point, like, Aileen has volunteered for her own execution, and we get to meet Jeb Bush.
Her appeals have been exhausted. She wants to meet her creator. She's on my list, absolutely.
Governor Jeb Bush is expected to sign Warnos' warrant soon.
And Nick, and this is another thing that kind of gets dropped in throughout the rest of the documentary, is that he is running. He's almost up for re-election, Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
And how politics plays a role in the criminal justice system and especially executions, because Jeb Bush was running on a platform of like super pro death penalty, which is like the weirdest thing to run on.
I know. Florida,
no rules.
I believe in the death penalty, and I have a duty to implement the law, and a great majority of Floridians want their governor to do this. And
so yeah, it just makes total sense that he's like, I'm gonna sign this, and it's like, look at my platform, everybody.
Yeah,
it's just like,
yeah,
really
it's
gross.
horrible. Now Nick Broomfield realizes he has to make a movie, so he like decides he's gonna go to Troy, Michigan, where she grew up, and basically we spend like 15 minutes with Dawn.
This is Dawn's house.
Hi, Joan. How are you?
What is Dawn wearing? A Rod Stewart t-shirt. Rod.
Of course.
Stewart. It's like 20 years old.
Yeah.
It has that hot pink script that was all the rage back in the late 80s, early 90s.
But the thing is, Dawn, like, this is where you start to see Dawn being a good friend to Aileen. She's got all of Aileen's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So she's keeping it for Aileen.
Right.
And she sort of, like, she shows Nick all of these pictures and all these, like, pen and ink drawings that Aileen does.
I got looking for one thing today. So I figured while I had Aileen's shit out, you can sit here.
For all this.
Yeah, and I got lots of pictures of her brothers and stuff like that. You might want to look at.
But we also learned that she, and this haunts me kind of, she had a baby when she was 13 that she mm-hmm. gave up for adoption, which means he's out there. He's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's a turning point in Aileen's life when she gives up this kid for adoption, because now at 13, having given birth to a kid, she's like the social pariah of the neighborhood.
Right. She's totally shunned, and she lives in the woods at the end of her street for 2 years.
It's so crazy. And Dawn and Nick sort of like go into the woods. They like walk into the woods, and Dawn is like showing her where Aileen lived.
Aileen used to have a fort back here, as a matter of fact.
Fort?
A fort.
Oh, with Dennis.
Yeah.
So Aileen would just sleep rough.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you guys, it's Michigan. It was freezing. She's telling all these stories about like how Aileen would try to like sleep in cars, and that's why she became a hooker.
She'd either sleep in the cars or she would go around prostituting at night to keep warm. Stuff like that. And hopefully she'd get a hotel. You know, some of these guys would say, we'll go get a hotel, and she could get a shower. That's how she washed and stuff like that.
This is where Dawn is kind of like, maybe it's just her personality. I don't know. I just don't like her very much.
Yeah,
but
no, same. Oh, please.
She says these things where she's talking about how cold it is out there, and Nick's like, oh my God, how did she survive? And Dawn says this thing where she's like, I don't know. I wasn't out here.
Right.
Well, it was for her. I didn't come out here in the winter, I'm sure.
John. You could have helped. I know if you guys were teenagers, fine, but it seems like they grew up in a time and a place where 13 is old. Like, you grew up really fast.
Yeah.
So I feel like you might have been able to help her in some way or be
supportive.
Well,
she was definitely like a good time friend. Like, she talks about how they would go to the gas station. It's still there, you guys. It's still there.
That gas station up there, which is still there, by the way. It used to be the Clark. Yeah. That's where we used to go in there and pinch our nose and drink, what was it?
Boom's Fire.
Peppermint schnapps.
Oh.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's the only way you could drink it, to get the quick buzz.
It's not that bad. Schnapps is actually delicious. You don't need to hold your nose when you drink peach schnapps. Do you want to talk about Dennis Allen real quick?
Oh, girl.
Sweetheart.
We went to visit Dennis Allen, who lived in the woods with Aileen and now lives in this house.
They go to this guy Dennis Allen's house, queen for a day. This man is the queeniest, and he knows it. Like, he's fully, like,
I don't think Dennis is trying to hide anything from anybody. I think Dennis is very aware and comfortable, and God bless him.
Dennis and his parakeets.
Freckles and Frida. Totally.
And who are these fine creatures?
Oh, those are my birds. It's Freckles and Frida.
Freckles and Frida.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, they show a picture of him.
This is a picture of Dennis, who used to be a cross-dresser.
To quote Nick Broomfield, a cross-dresser.
Nick Broomfield.
Nicholas J. Broomfield.
When was this movie made? Like, Nick, right, what year is this that girl, everyone's like a hooker and a cross-dresser and like, come on.
And Nick invented homosexuality. Remember that?
Like, what's happening?
But so, like, we meet this guy because he also, I mean, like, so creepy.
I know.
He, like, lived in the woods with her. He talks about building a lean-to.
And so Eileen would come and visit you.
Yeah. Every now and then she'd find one of my camps and come. In fact, the last camp I was at when Eileen found me was what we called the Little Round Lake. Mm-hmm. It was way down at the bottom of a gully, and it was round.
It's just like, can you guys please take care of your children?
I know.
Can you please just love your kids? Okay, so can you talk to us? Okay, so now we're done with Dawn, and now we're in Michelle's car, and she's taking us on a tour of the neighborhood.
So she takes us on this driving tour. Again, Nick, with the camera and the car. I mean, but she's literally like, we used to do drugs with Beep and Beep over there. Beep was a druggie. Beep sold us LSD. Beep just... dropping names and selling people out left and right, and Nick has to bleep all of them because she is just doesn't give a fuck.
She used to do a lot of drugs with who lived in this little white one, and he lived right here, and they were druggies also. We used to hang together and go over there and smoke pot and do whatnot.
And she's calling them druggies, and yeah, I used to party with them. Pills, lots of pills, lots of pills.
But lots of different drugs.
Yes. Lots of pills, actually.
Pills.
LSD, mescaline, bladder acid.
The pills. Oh, my God.
Lots of pills. Lots That's of Michigan pills. For you.
Oh, and she also, like, she takes him to Aileen's actual house where she grew up. And she's like, we can't stay here too long. They'll come out and raise hell.
If somebody sees us in there, they will come out and raise hell because Corey was with me. When that happened last time.
She's like, it happened last time. Michelle. Is this really like the walk down memory lane you want to take on more than one occasion? Lots of pills.
Well, so this is when we find out that at age 16, Aileen moved to Florida looking for sun and friends.
She particularly liked it here near Daytona Beach. This is one of the motels, the Fairview, where she frequently stayed. It was also new and exciting. Just down the road is the Last Resort biker bar where Eileen liked to hang out. She was allegedly great friends with the human bomb.
Can you tell us about the human bomb?
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like, you guys. He blows himself up.
He literally blows himself up.
In the backwoods of Florida. I mean, they're in the woods. It's backwoods. Like, there's
it's
no...
It's a bar in the backwoods, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, he's just laying there right. on, like, cinder blocks or something and just blows himself up. No one even really reacts to it.
No.
Like, there's no real applause. He just, like, explodes. And then, like,
they get a fire extinguisher and put him out.
They run over with fire extinguishers. And then Nick immediately thinks this is the best time to really get down to the nitty-gritty of his relationship with Aileen. And the guy is, you can see he's, like, cross-eyed and he's got, like, the birds flying around him, like cartoons. And Nick's like, hey, so how are you feeling?
How do you feel?
And then the guy's like,
real dizzy right now.
Nick's like, cool. So, Aileen, what can you tell me about her?
You know Lee well.
Yeah.
And the dude's like,
can I talk to y'all a few minutes? I gotta walk this off.
You have to walk off being blown up.
For the record, we never see him again.
He went, so did Nick just put that in? Because he's like, this is too good. I can't knock. But we learn nothing from
right,
this person.
Right. Exactly.
So we learn a couple of more things about Aileen because she went down to Florida when she was 16. So now at this point, we learn that Keith, her brother, who she may or may not have had a sexual relationship, we don't know.
Yeah.
He died of cancer at 21.
Right.
Which was a turning point for Aileen, and she's sort of lost, and she makes some questionable decisions, like marrying Louis Fell,
uh-huh.
who's 76 years old.
Had a great job.
The president of the Keystone Coal Company.
But after only a month, Lewis filed restraining charges after Eileen beat Lewis with his own walking stick.
Beat him with his own walking stick.
It's not, I'm not laughing at the violence of it. I'm laughing at the absurdity of it.
That's a sentence that
right.
I just had to say out loud.
It's so insane.
Is crazy.
I know.
Like,
I know.
What did this guy do?
And like, how did they meet? Like, there's. Can you imagine that
it's
movie?
Florida. I know.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Girl, this message is sponsored by Greenlight. We all know this. Greenlight is the debit card and money app for families that helps kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely.
Yeah, and also the parents are involved too.
Yes.
Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids spending and saving.
So this is, I say this every week. We have this with Daisy. I love it. You can customize the debit card. We've got a picture of Golden on it. I love talking to Daisy about money. I never had any of that financial planning when I was a kid. Nobody taught me anything. I love getting to like go over the app with Daisy. She can see what's in her account. She can see us using the allowance feature, so she sees that she gets her allowance every week, and then we can talk about what she wants to save for and what she wants to spend her money on.
It's demystifying it.
It is,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And then kids and teens, too, can build money confidence and skills in a more fun and accessible way.
Exactly. And maybe, girl, that's why millions of parents and kids, just like me and Steve and Daisy, are already learning about money on Greenlight, the number one family finance safety app.
Yeah, they also have the chores feature, where you can set up one-time or recurring chores. You can customize it to your household. You can reward kids with an allowance for a job well done. We're all keeping track.
She asks about it every single week.
I would.
Every Friday as we're getting into the weekend, it's macaroni and cheese and Greenlight time.
Look, girl after my own heart.
So fam, start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/TCO.
That's greenlight.com/TCO to get started.
Greenlight.com/TCO and customize that debit card.
That's right.
So now there's another Nick visit.
Dawn told Eileen about our visit to Troy. And Eileen asked for the opportunity to put the record straight about her childhood.
She's like, you know, she's going to fire her lawyer if he tries to stop the execution. She's full on like, I need to be executed. And this is really scary and unsettling because she's like very excitable and she's fixing her hair again.
Every time she comes into a room where she's like about to be interviewed, she's like, she's in a mood that just reminds me of that girl from Slender Man who was on the phone and she was like manic.
Yeah.
Like there's that manic like sense of like, oh my God, I'm going to see somebody from the outside world.
Hey, how you doing? Good to see you.
Yeah. And then like Nick starts asking her about like the facts and, you know, was it self-defense? And she like won't acknowledge reality in any way.
Right.
And she won't. And then she starts talking about how wonderful her parents and family were, like as if she wasn't totally abandoned and abused.
Right.
My dad was so straight and so clean. He wouldn't even take his shirt off to mow the lawn. He did not believe in cussing. He did not believe in long hair and mini skirts and stuff. He was really straight, really decent. And so was my mom. My mom hated swearing in the house. If you swore, you said one swear word, you had a whole bar of lava soap in your mouth. So I came from a real clean and decent family.
And she goes from being very excitable and very like so great to see Nick to just ranting and raving and screaming about getting that fucking warrant signed.
And they're just daring me to kill again. They got me pissed. United States Supreme Court, you fucking, I'm telling you, man, you motherfuckers keep fucking with my goddamn execution. There's gonna be bloodshed. I'm sick of this. Get that fucking warrant signed.
So Nick, again, just as a reminder, Nick is not buying any of this. He really believes that she did do these murders in self-defense, that she's just trying to die. And so, like, he can't help himself. He sort of, like, lets her think he's turned the tape off, the recording off, and like, continues the conversation, like, this hushed conversation. And she's telling him that there's no way she could have handled a life sentence.
They do crazy things to the people while they're incarcerated. I'd never be able to handle it, so I'm going for the death. I have to. Because they're too evil. They're too evil to the people incarcerated.
And then they have this horrible moment where he's trying to ask her on the sly and she can't hear him.
I mean, it's so absurdly, sadly comical where he's just like...
But was it self-defense?
Huh?
Was it self-defense?
What?
Was it self-defense?
What?
Was it self-defense?
Yes, but I can't tell anybody. never. I have to go down to the execution.
So here in this moment, she acknowledges that the Mallory killing was in self-defense. And she says, yes, and there were some others.
Was Mallory self-defense?
Yeah. And so was some others.
Right.
So I think this is where me and you can find some agreement, where that they weren't all in self-defense. There were definitely were some were cold-blooded murders, mm-hmm. but that it wasn't black and white or cut and dry. Like, it wasn't just that she was a cold-blooded murderer or that she was a hooker who always found herself in these horrible situations and had to kill these men.
Yes,
I think
absolutely.
This is the most honest moment we get from her in the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a monster, and I'm not going to say, like, it's ridiculous that she would need self-defense as a hitchhiking sex worker. Like, obviously, like, you just have to be on the defense all the time.
Yeah. So then after this interview, we see really quickly that, like, the Jeb Bush has signed the death warrant and mm-hmm. the execution is scheduled for October 9th.
A month before the election.
Right. And that's
more
all part of the plan, right?
Yeah. So just another, we just keep hearing things that sort of go against what Aileen has been saying, and not just from her.
Yeah.
Like, she contradicts herself, but then we sit down with her mother.
Her, like, biological mother, who, by the way, we haven't seen, she hasn't seen her mother in 25 years or longer. Like, the story is that the mother gave birth to her and then immediately abandoned the family.
Right.
And that's why Aileen was raised by her grandfather and grandmother.
Right. So we meet her mother.
Yeah.
And she tells us this story about how Aileen was born a Frank Breech birth.
Right.
Which I had never heard of before.
No, me either. And it's this really rare. So, like, regular breeches, you come out feet first,
right.
which is dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then this type of breech is, like, you come out, like, ass first.
So you're, like, folded?
Kind of. And I guess she was saying that it's so rare that they had to call, the doctor was calling other people into the room to see,
like,
it.
Watch it.
And a Frank breech, bottom first, is really very bad, but I thought maybe that she got some kind of brain damage during that birth.
Yeah.
And that may have caused, while she's mentally competent, mm-hmm. it may have caused her problems.
And then she has this weird moment where she, like, didn't know about Aileen sleeping in the woods.
Right. She's like, oh, I hadn't heard that. Like, this is clearly a mother who has no idea.
She was sleeping out in the snow for a while and living in the woods.
She was sleeping in the snow and living in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Immediately after she had the baby.
I know nothing about that. I never heard Barry tell me that.
Yeah, I just don't. I just don't buy the whole, like, she what? She was where? Like, I don't know. I just find it, I don't know. The
right.
whole thing is just a goddamn nightmare. Ugh. Speaking of goddamn nightmares, Jeb Bush offers a stay of execution for a psych study for literally 15 minutes.
We're going to ask three psychiatrists to analyze her to make sure that she's fit for the execution, which is a duty that I have, and I intend to do it.
Jeb ordered a stay of execution, but guess what? His psychiatrist examined Aileen for just 15 minutes and then gave the thumbs up to go ahead.
It's 15
and
minutes.
And the psychiatrist is like, nope, she's good.
Yeah. And so the execution's back on.
Yeah. And so then the movie gets really intense at the end. So, like, we'll go through this fast, but she has the opportunity to have a final press conference, and she says no. Instead, she wants Nick to come in to do the last interview. And Nick comes in, and it doesn't go great.
No, it doesn't go great.
So, like, at first it's very cordial. Aileen is saying to him, like,
you know, I already told you everything, so, you know, you just go ahead and ask me questions, and if I want to answer them, I'll answer them, okay?
And this is where we really get, like, a first row seat to her just mental instability and all these theories she has about her sonic pressure. And
it's like all this crazy stuff about what she thinks they've been doing to her in jail. And it's one of the reasons why she wants to die.
Right.
They had the intercom on in the room, and they kept lying that it wasn't on. And they were using sonic pressure on my head since 1997.
Sonic pressure.
And every time I was trying to write something, I think they had some kind of eye in the cell, I'm not sure, but every time I started writing something, it went up higher. So I'm thinking that probably had the TV rigged. The TV or the mirror, something was rigged.
And then, like, Nick again tries to get her to talk about, like, the cases, and she won't do it. She's not having any part of that.
And then she's basically screaming at him. Like, they get into a real fight.
What really sets her off, I think, is when he says, you know, we just went and talked to your mother. And she was not there for that.
No, no, no.
Nick tells her that the mother asked for her forgiveness. You know how I'm always like, don't end with forgiveness? They don't.
Yeah, no. Nope, they sure don't.
Well, she asked you.
I don't know her. I never even knew her.
She asked you for your forgiveness.
She can go to hell. She didn't have any of my forgiveness. I don't even know her. Don't even want to know her.
And then it just ends with her like cutting the interview. Like she just is like, we're done.
We're going to have to cut this interview, Nick. I'm not going to go into any more detail. I'm leaving. I'm glad. Thanks a lot, society, for railroading my ass.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy because they do have this like decades long relationship at this point.
Yeah.
And then like Aileen's at the door and Nick does this like very awkward trying to apologize thing that kind of falls
flat. I mean, because it's the last moment. I mean, it's such a such a mind F.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then, you know, kind of like as the wrap up, like she has her last meal with her friend Dawn, and then Nick picks Dawn up afterwards, and Dawn is saying to him, like, she's really sorry. She wasn't giving the finger to you.
Yeah.
So it's the day of the execution, and we see the news reports leading up to the execution. And then at the very end, they come out and they hold a press conference to say that the execution was carried out, and they say her last words.
During Eileen Wuornos's brief 1-minute final statement, she alluded to the fact of that she would be sailing away with the rock. She'll be back with Jesus Christ, like on Independence Day, on June 6th, just like the movie, on the big mother ship. I'll be back.
You guys, thanks for hanging out with us and Aileen Wuornos and Nick Broomfield. Like, I remember I said Bloomfield the whole time.
There was one, I think it was Kurt and Courtney where you like it, you edited in. You were like, hey guys, yes. I know I've said his name wrong.
That's right.
I hate it, but just whatever. Like, you just wanted everyone to know that you knew.
I know, I did
which
know.
Which is totally something I would do.
You guys, don't forget the video of our very first ever live show is up on the Patreon feed. Go get it.
Yep.
And you know, if you're not a member of the Patreon fam yet, you'll have something like 69 other episodes to listen to.
For how many dollars?
$5.
$5
a month, you guys.
So much shit. Just being honest with you.
Girl, what are we doing next week?
Oh my God, we are doing Whitey, United States of America versus James J. Bulger.
You guys, Whitey Bulger just died.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't know, because it happened right before we started recording. He was transferred. He's like 90, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
He was transferred prisons and then like didn't even last a day in there.
No, they killed him. The prisoners killed him.
Yeah.
So you guys, that's what we're going to do next week. So you guys stay tuned for the outtakes and the preview for, you know, the Whitey Bulger thing.
Yes.
And our amazing palate cleanser this week.
Yes.
All right, we'll see you next week, you guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Whitey's just staring at me and just grinding his teeth. He said, I'll kill you. I'll stab you and then I'll kill you. I'm like, holy Jesus.
Whitey killed my sister, took her teeth out.
Whitey popped them and killed them.
Bulger asked if he wanted one in the head and shot him in the head.
He murdered people there, he buried people there, and he went to sleep there.
There were over 25 years where Bulger ruled the organized crime world. He was never charged with even a misdemeanor.
Whitey Bulger faces possible maximum life in prison.
This isn't really a typical criminal trial.
This is not about getting acquitted.
Don't you want to know what really went on?
Is the government excited about having Bulger come back? Some people certainly are, but there are others who have many sleepless nights about what James Bulger is going to testify to.
I asked the questions, I got the answers for money. I had contacts in the state police, the Boston police, also in the FBI.
The very office that is currently prosecuting Whitey Bulger had some kind of corrupt relationship with Whitey Bulger.
The federal government is so desperate to try to convince people that he's an informant.
Where's the Boston police? Where's the FBI?
He realized, I get a blank check. I can do anything I want.
You want to hang around with gangsters and wise guys, this is what happens.
There were some things about the file that were so suspicious.
Without the FBI, my father would be alive today.
You shut up. You're not allowed to talk about that.
This prick here is never going to run free. I mean it. I'd take him out.
When he was captured, he came out of the elevator and faced law enforcement with their guns drawn. And they were screaming at him, get down on your knees, get down on your knees. Whitey Bulger's not going to get down on his knees for anybody.
Whitey Bulger is a vicious murderer, but he was enabled by the FBI.
It'll be like a full-on Lin-Manuel Miranda rap.
Oh, great. Is he here? He is in your closet.
He's coming. He's just, it's like that guy will never leave.
It's just, you know,
with
he's
him,
nice about
he's
it.
He's nice,
that's
but
the
like
thing
Lin,
that's hard about
I know,
it.
I know,
like,
I know.
Like, he's so nice, but he's like as needy as he is nice.
But Lin, you have to let us have lives at this point.
I mean, you talented genius.
And you're right. He does like sound like so annoyed, but you know this is like the best day of his life.
Eileen called me and asked if I'd come to the prison with my cameras. So I went to the prison. You can't just pray a wolf into existence. Because if you can, I would have done it already. But they're breeding like...
You can't just pray a dog into existence.
You can't.
What is she trying to say here?
She's just, you know, serial killers are into that thrill kill jazz.
Right.
She was into the Robin biz.
Yeah.
Because now Aileen is talking about she can't die in the execution as a lawyer. She has to come clean and cleansed in the
as
spirit of Jesus Christ as a liar.
What if Aileen died in the execution chamber as a lawyer?
Why do I keep doing that?
For the outtakes.
For the outtakes.
And then we learn about Tyra, like her great love.
Well, I sent you a screenshot of with the captions where it was like, you know, with the voiceover's always in italics.
Yeah.
And so it was Nick's voiceover being like, her great love, Tyra. And then it was Tyra on the stand, like hunched over. We met at a bar.
I know. Florida.
Florida, no rules. Yeah. And except that you have to kill people. It's the only rule in Florida.
And do we have any listeners in Florida?
You guys, come hang with us in New York.
Hello, sailor. My name's Wilfred. What's yours? I put a spell on you. And now you're gone. My plan is fell on you. And it was strong. Your wretched little life have all been cursed because of all the witches working.
Great show. Cover your ears.
I put a spell on.